The Foxconn deal is expected to create 13,000 jobs at a flat screen manufacturing plant in Mount Pleasant. The spin-off jobs from the plant could number 22,000. At this point, it's all speculation, though, as all eyes are on what is in the contract that the Wisconsin Jobs Agency signed off on yesterday. Jason Stein reports for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. So sorry, Jason, I messed up on your title heading into the news break there. Jason covers the state capitol, including moves to bring Foxconn to Wisconsin. Your insights in this conversation as well, 800-642-1234. How do you see the Foxconn agreement affecting future agreements in Wisconsin? Will other manufacturers expect incentives, or is Foxconn a one-off? 800-642-1234. Let's go to Kevin in Janesville. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, good morning. A couple of questions on the clawback. Number one, what if high-tech industry supersedes this LED screen product that Foxconn makes and leaves it in the dust? Is Wisconsin still on the hook? And number two, is there anything on longevity of these job creation requirements? Could the jobs be here for 6 months and then Foxconn gets the money and says, okay, bye-bye, I'll take anything off the air. Thanks.
Thanks, Kevin. Yeah, Jason, technology changes, huh? First question there.
It certainly does, and that's one of the big risks in this deal. I mean, these are display screens. They're supposed to be very sophisticated, but we all know that, I mean, you know, the TVs that we look at today are not the TVs that we looked at 15 or 20 years ago. And obviously, you know, this is a deal where the state is looking to recoup at least its tax dollars over a very long horizon. There's the clawbacks are very complex. But it comes down to this. There are a couple sets of job creation metrics, and under there are certain targets that Foxconn would have to meet in terms of job creation to get paid these tax credits, probably in cash, from the state of Wisconsin. And then, you know, if they failed to meet those targets in a given year, if they came close to them, they could still keep the tax credits that they had received in the past. If they fell well short of them, then you could have a situation where they would be required to pay tax credits back. You know, there's certainly one advantage of the deal is that it does appear to be enforceable with the parent company of Foxconn, which is a, you know, a very big company that is likely to be viable for many years. So at least in terms of the clawbacks, I think it would be, you know, at least right now I'm being told that the contract could be enforced even if this flat screen subsidiary went belly up.
Belly up. Okay. Let's go to John now in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Something I've been wondering about, if you could investigate. One of the things that I don't understand is this idea that we're going to somehow be able to fill these jobs. You know, I teach at a local technical college. We've got hundreds of employers looking for the same type of worker. It's the number one reason businesses don't expand. They can't find that skilled worker. And now all of a sudden we're going to be able to come up with, you know, these jobs, these employees, these trained workers to fill these. And to me, that there's got to be some clause in there that Foxconn has said, if we can't, we're going to fill those jobs, provided we can find the workers for those jobs. And if not, maybe they go to Illinois. Maybe they just don't hire people. So I'm wondering if there's any kind of study that's been done to prove that we can even meet this demand.
And caveats in the contract that are reliant on finding the skilled labor.
Sure. Well, I mean, obviously, there's nothing that would prevent Foxconn from training some of its own people. But, I mean, I think that's you've identified very much a challenge that's going to be out there for the deal. I mean, to a certain extent, you know, the state is paying, you know, $15,000 per job or more to sort of, you know, in part that may economically allow Foxconn to sort of bid up the cost of that labor, you know, to the potential detriment of other businesses in the region. You know, I think very clearly it would be, it's going to be a great challenge to produce those sort of workers locally. I think the Walker administration has been pretty open about the fact that they're going to need workers to move from other parts of the country to southeastern Wisconsin. And, you know, they're presenting that as an opportunity for Wisconsin to, you know, attract a talent pool that, that maybe we didn't have or don't have in the numbers that we do today. But, you know, Kevin, I believe it was Kevin, you know, has certainly identified a challenge for this deal going forward.
Let's go to Katie now in Elmhurst Junction. Hi, Katie. Go ahead.
I've heard a lot about the numbers of jobs, but is there any indication about the wages these workers will be paid? My concern is if the wages aren't a living wage, that we might be secondarily subsidizing the company with public assistance benefits if the wages aren't high enough to support a family.
Sure. That's a good question. There are a couple things that, you know, are spelled out very clearly in the contract on that. The company's got to meet certain jobs targets, and to meet those jobs targets, the job has got to pay at least $30,000 a year. If it doesn't, you know, that job, you know, the company could still hire that person, but it wouldn't count toward their target. To get any tax credits, the jobs have also got to be pay an average wage. The qualifying jobs of just under $54,000. So again, if they don't meet that average, the state could, at least in theory, refuse to pay them any tax credits at all. And then the tax credits are—they're not a flat sum per job. They're a percentage. It's 17 cents on the dollar of the qualifying payroll. So the, you know, the higher wages that Foxconn paid to the workers that it did hire, the larger their bonus from the state could be, up to a point. After $100,000 a year for any individual worker, then the company wouldn't get anything. So they wouldn't get a huge bonus on executives that were very highly paid, but they would get that on, you know, sort of upper middle class type jobs.
Katie, thanks for the call. Let's go to Keith now in Kenosha. Hi, Keith. Go ahead.
Good morning. I was wondering that during the 80s and 90s, we saw so many manufacturing jobs flow out of this country, and it was due to going to different countries that had lower wage structures. Now, I read where jobs were actually coming back to this country, but a lot of them were based upon using more technology. And so you'd actually need fewer workers. So my question is, why is Foxconn coming here where they'd have a higher wage structure? And the question I'm wondering about is, since we don't know how much money they're getting up front, is it possible that they get huge tax breaks up front, don't hit their bonuses as far as getting the jobs, but really made out on the state of Wisconsin? And so kind of was like a ruse.
Keith, thank you so much for that call. Go ahead, Jason.
Sure. Again, I think that's one reason why it was so important, as I mentioned earlier, that they're now the tax credits paid for Foxconn's investment in the plant are also, explicitly tied to job creation, whereas before it would have been possible for Foxconn to, you know, build a very expensive plant that was automated, you know, to a degree never before seen, and that didn't employ, you know, a ton of workers, and they could have still gotten at least nearly half of the tax credits. Now that plant investment is still tied to, you know, a fairly large job creation number. So that at least is there. You know, again, I think it's important to note that, you know, I think people are always asking sort of like, how could Foxconn maybe wiggle out of the deal? Again, I mean, I think it's really important to note that the deal is really good for Foxconn. You know, I mean, they do not have to do some sort of acrobatic maneuver to get a good deal out of this contract. The contract is a good deal for the company. I mean, they're getting up to $2.85 billion in cash payments from the state of Wisconsin. And again, as a manufacturer, they will never have to pay, you know, almost any profit, you know, taxes on the profits from their manufacturing permanently under state law. So again, I mean, it's a really good deal as it is for the company.
Jason, take us now where this goes next. Here we have a contract signed off by WEDEC, Wisconsin's economic development arm. What happens now?
There's still a local agreement that has been signed in a tentative form and must be signed in a finalized form. There's about $760 million in village and county incentives to Foxconn that still need to be approved. I expect that to happen very quickly, you know, perhaps as quickly as next week. Then you have, you know, really years of land deals and construction and, you know, potential eminent domain issues for the village of Mount Pleasant as it expands roads for Foxconn. I mean, you know, it's very important to note that this is just the begin, you know, the end of the beginning. I mean, the real work of building one of the largest manufacturing campuses in the United States, you know, if this does come to pass, that all starts now. So for years to come, we'll be talking about, you know, hiccups and challenges and perhaps, you know, rewards and good things too from this project.
Jason, thanks so much for taking time for us.
Thank you.
Jason Stein covers the state capitol for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We've been discussing the Foxconn incentive package that Wisconsin's Economic Development Agency voted in favor of yesterday. Earlier in the hour, we talked with WPR's Eau Claire-based reporter Rich Kramer about the UW restructuring and the merger of the UW two-year schools with the four-year institutions. We can continue both of these conversations over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. This hour, The Morning Show was produced by Keely Voltina and Nyasia Ellison with help from executive producer Michelle Johnson. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. Thank you.